your AEW Dynamite review with a monster who's following in QT Marshall's footsteps.
The Solomon Stare. I want everybody to call me the Solomon Stare from now on.
The Solomon Stare.
Man, how are you going to cut Minoru Suzuki's theme song, his first match ever on Dynamite, in the main event? You're going to come out and cut Kaza Ninara. You're not going to let the fans chant along to the song. That was one of the moments I was looking forward to the most tonight. And they cut the guy's music off. I should give this entire show a thumbs down just for that alone. Hot off the biggest AEW pay-per-view of all time, and probably their best. You know, in my opinion, I thought that was a hell of a show on Sunday. Coming down now from the highs of All Out, we knew tonight was going to be a bit of a come-down. But I still thought, on the whole, this was an enjoyable show that was over before you knew it. That's one of the things, when I watch Dynamite, you know, so there are some weeks where there isn't a whole lot going on. It feels a little bit longer maybe than certain other weeks. Rampage is always a quick watch because it's an hour. Tonight's episode of Dynamite was over in a jiff. There was so many different things going on, you never really had a moment to think about what time it was. I mean, I do because I got to figure out when I'm going live. But I enjoyed the show tonight as a whole. They are clearly getting ready for the big Arthur Ashe show in 2 weeks. That's going to be their biggest crowd ever in AEW history. Over 17,000 people here in New York City are going to be packing Arthur Ashe Stadium. Hey, Jack Lopez, just subscribe. That's right. Asuka gives you the thumbs up. So they're preparing for their big show. They announced a few matches for Arthur Ashe tonight. And there's another one, I think, that has not been announced that I'll talk about in a little bit, because it's very interesting to see where the new names now are being slotted here on this show. We had Bryan Danielson, who clearly is going right to Kenny Omega. I don't know if it'll be for the championship or not, but they were programmed together in a segment tonight. Bryan got him in the yes lock before the other members of the Elite got him off. So he's right there with Kenny Omega right out of the gate. CM Punk, he's going to take his time. It looks like Punk is going to work his way through the roster, work with a lot of the younger guys. He did with Darby Allin at All Out. Tonight he was jaw-jacking with Taz, talking about, give me Starks, give me Hobbs, give me Liberty, give me Death, give me Hook. So that is what he's going to be doing, and then Adam Cole is part of the Elite. Some of you on the stream the other night suggested that it's all just a ruse, and he's going to turn on the Elite for what they did to him years ago. I'm starting to think there might be something to that, but if it happens, it's not going to happen for a while. So he's with his Elite buddies. He's going to be right there in the mix. We also saw Ruby Soho on the show tonight, so we'll get into all of that. The biggest thing I noticed from this show, and it really affected the main event, unfortunately, time management. Time management seemed to be a big issue with AEW tonight. I noticed it first in the Punk segment, where it looked like they actually went short. And it's as if they didn't really know what to do. So they were trying to kind of stall for time until the commercial break. Then we get to the main event, and they didn't have enough time. They did not have enough time. That's why they had to cut Suzuki's entrance short. That's why it felt so short. They gave it less than 10 minutes. And it was Jon Moxley's big homecoming in Cincinnati. They had so many things on the show that it actually cut the main event short, which was very disappointing. I still enjoyed the main event. I still love the fact that we got to see Minoru Suzuki wrestle live on TNT. We got some color in the main event, albeit unintentional. Hopefully he's okay. Suzuki had a bad cut by his eye. We're going to talk about all of it right now. This is your AEW Dynamite review for September 8th, 2021. I am the Solomonster. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage here tonight. I want to shout out two very important people here before we get rocking and rolling here with the review. First of all, Anti. I want to thank him for upgrading his channel membership to Legend tier, up from Superstar. So Anti, thank you. And Nick Khalifa for becoming a channel member. Thank you both. It was mentioned actually during the show in the Elite segment, the PWI 500 was released. And I always look forward to this every year, because everybody gets all bent out of shape. Everybody gets pissy about who's number one, who's not number one, who was left off, who's in the top 10, as if it fucking matters. But we go through this every single year. People get upset about this kayfabe list that doesn't mean anything. And to the wrestlers, it probably is a pretty cool thing, you know, because a lot of these guys grew up probably reading the PWI 500. So when you become a wrestler and you see your name on the list, even if you're way down at number 500, I can see that being a cool thing. But for everybody else, oh my God, all of the debate, all of the just the yelling and the screaming and the hatred that I saw online for Kenny Omega being ranked number one in this year's PWI 500, and the tribal chief, Roman Reigns, comes in at number two. As soon as I saw that, I said, boy, the only thing I'm missing here is a bucket of popcorn. And sure enough, all day long, back and forth, AEW fans going after WWE, WWE stans going after AEW. Sometimes I wish the earth would just kind of open up and swallow all of them and then close. But it is amusing. And I want to just read you, for those of you who may have missed it and are curious, who else populated the top 10? Now, they separate it. You have the men's list and the women's list. So the women and men don't mix. There's no co-ed list, at least not this year. But the evaluation period was July 1st of 2020. So that's where it began. July 1, okay, of last summer. And it runs through June 30th of this year, which would include Kenny Omega's AEW title defense on Dynamite against Jungle Boy. But Roman Reigns did not return to WWE until, what was it, the week after SummerSlam? Or was it at SummerSlam? It was at SummerSlam. So based on this evaluation period, Roman Reigns missed about 2 months. So just keep that in mind if you're all bent out of shape about where Roman Reigns fell on this list. But let me just read you the top 10 real quick. Kenny Omega was number one, as he and Don Callis mentioned on the show tonight. Roman Reigns was number two. Bobby Lashley was number three. Drew McIntyre was number four. Kota Ibushi, number five. Jon Moxley, number six. Will Ospreay, number seven. Finn Balor, number eight. Shingo Takagi, number nine. And Rich Swann, number 10. That is your top 10 for the PWI 500. You know, Rich Swann actually, Impact doesn't get a lot of attention, but Rich Swann was having a hell of a year until, of course, he ran into Kenny Omega. That was the end of Rich Swann's year as Impact World Champion. But he had himself a good year, so it's nice to see someone from Impact represented on that list. I was curious where Darby Allin fell. He was number 14. We had Karrion Kross. Gladiator Shredder was number 16. Chris Jericho, 19. Anyway, the point is, don't get bent out of shape about this. It doesn't mean anything, okay? It doesn't mean anything. And frankly, if you look at the top two, if you want my opinion, do I agree with the list? It doesn't bother me. I could have gone either way. If Roman Reigns was number one and Kenny Omega was number two, that would have been fine with me. Because Roman Reigns is coming off the best year of his career. I enjoy Roman Reigns. I enjoy his work, his character work, his matches in WWE. But I also look at Kenny Omega and I see somebody who was not just winning championships in AEW, but has won championships in multiple promotions. And he's had great matches with people in Impact. Sami Callihan, he wrestled Moose, right? He had the some AAA mega title matches against Laredo Kid and... So, Kenny Omega's body of work, to me, is even more impressive because he was working with people across promotions, winning championships across promotion, but it's all just the kayfabe list anyway. Everyone's criteria, as they look at it, is going to be different. There is no need to fight each other. There is no need to have these fierce battles. But as soon as I saw that Omega was number one, I knew that it would be like a fucking time bomb going off. I just find it all so very amusing. So anyway, there's your PWI 500 update. Can't we all just get along, right? Roman Reigns is a fine champion. Kenny Omega is a fine champion. There are some AEW matches he's had that I enjoy more than others. This is a very different Kenny Omega than the one we saw in New Japan when he was the IWGP champion. But still, he has had an impressive year. I think we can just leave it at that. It's the one time a year that the PWI is apparently considered such a big deal and so relevant. I don't hear anybody talking about them when the other than when the 500 list comes out. And then it comes out and it's almost like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So Excalibur is getting married. That's weird enough to know, right? Excalibur is getting married. I don't know when. They said that he was away this week getting ready for his wedding. So Taz took his place alongside Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone. I wonder if he'll wear the mask at the wedding. What do you think? Think he'll wear the mask? Think his wife will make him wear the mask at the wedding? I have to say, I don't mind Excalibur. I think Excalibur is fine. But I really enjoyed Taz being on commentary tonight. I wouldn't mind it, frankly, if Taz became a permanent part of the announce crew. Because I enjoy his work on commentary. Excalibur, again, not a knock on him, but he wasn't really missed tonight. I thought they were perfectly fine. So we got things started with Malakai Black. One-on-one against the natural Dustin Rhodes. Every time I see Black's entrance now, I've seen a few of them, it gets cooler each time. I really like his entrance. I like the whole... You know, lights go out, he's in a different spot. Lights go out, it's like he's teleporting to different spots. The skull mask. The entrance is great. So Dustin was trying to get redemption here. This was the story of the match. Dustin was trying to get redemption for everything that Malakai Black has done to his family. That being the Nightmare family. His brother Cody, all the other Nightmare family members. Lee Johnson, Big Shoddy, whatever the hell he wants to call himself. He's been knocking him dead. So tonight was Dustin Rhodes trying to get revenge for all of them. Spoiler, he didn't. But he tried. Immediately, Dustin goes on offense. That came to a very abrupt end. Malakai gives him a back suplex through the timekeeper's table outside. And he was selling an injury to his left knee as referee Aubrey Edwards went out to check on him. Now, while all of that is going on, back in the ring, Malakai Black removes the top turnbuckle pad from one of the corners. So keep that in mind, because that would factor into the finish. Back inside, Malakai starts focusing on the left knee, puts a heel hook on. Dustin makes the ropes. Black starts punking him out with little cheap shots, little boots to the head, trying to piss him off. And Dustin fires back. He tries for the destroyer. We see him do destroyers in a lot of his matches. But his knee wouldn't allow it. So Malakai rocked him with a knee to the side of the head. He heads outside. And Malakai goes under the ring and he pulls out Cody's boot, which just so happens to be sitting under the ring. Remember when Cody took his boots off after he lost to Black? He was teasing retirement. So he pulls out one of Cody's white boots and he brings it into the ring and he throws it at Dustin. Almost like, hey, take a look at this. Like he's trying to piss him off. And again, Dustin fires up. He hits the destroyer this time, only gets a near fall out of it. Dustin tries for the running bulldog out of the corner. Black, though, holds on. And when Dustin comes charging back in, Black ducks out of the way, and Dustin goes headfirst right into the exposed buckle. And as he staggers out of the corner, Black hits the spinning heel kick. Did not look good. Hit him more in the shoulder than it did in the face or the head. But it was enough to get the three. Dustin was bleeding from the mouth. The missed kick did not look great. That was really the only blemish on this match. But I think it was one of the... It was Taz, I think. I think Taz was the one who said, well, he didn't get all of it, but, you know, he was already kind of loopy and wobbly from going headfirst into the steel. So I like that. At least they tried to explain, even though the kick was not exactly on point, the guy just went face first into the steel. And it was enough for him to get the three count. That, I thought, was a good way of trying to explain it away. But aside from the finish not looking good, I enjoyed the match. It was a hot opener. The people were into it. Dustin is still at whatever age he is now, early 50s, doing some great work. You know, he has a certain role on the roster. He shouldn't be in main events or anything like that, not, you know, consistently. But he's a veteran worker. He can still cut a fiery babyface promo better than almost anybody in that company because he's been doing this for a long time. And his work in the ring is still solid. He was being fed to Malakai Black to build to the rematch, which we all knew was coming. It was just a matter of when. Malakai Black one-on-one against Cody Rhodes. And in fact, we now have a date for that match. They just went and announced it later in the show. I wrote in my notes, I said, I wonder if this is building to Arthur Ashe. And that's where Cody is either going to come back and make an appearance, or they're going to do something with him and Malachi. And then before I could even go live tonight, they were running down the next few weeks. And they said, oh, Arthur Ashe Stadium, September 22nd. It's going to be Cody one-on-one against Malachi Black. It's like, there you go. So the match is official. And I will say what I said last week and what I think I've said over the past 2 weeks, which is that Cody does not have to win. Cody should not win that match. Now, Malachi might cheat. I don't see him getting another straight-up clean win over Cody Rhodes, but Malachi Black should win that match as well. Cody does not need to come back and get his win back over Malachi, unless they want to have an extended program with these two and have the rubber match later on build to a third match. I don't want to see Malachi Black lose yet. There's no need for him to go in there and lose to Cody. Because then where do you go from there? I guess you, again, possibly to a third match. I'm hoping they go against conventional wisdom here and don't have Cody come back and just beat him. Because I think that would be a mistake. But that is official for September 22nd on Dynamite. Shout out to everybody joining us here live tonight in the chat. I welcome all of you. Again, this is your Dynamite review. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. Do hit that like button if you stick around for a while. We had a promo from Eddie Kingston, a video package, talking about the match with Miro from All Out the other night. And he called Miro out for using a low blow. Miro came back and said that he would offer Kingston's broken bones to his wife, and he would offer his soul to God. So we are going to get a rematch between these two. They didn't say when, but we are going to see them matched up again for the TNT title at some point, which is fine with me. I enjoyed their match at the pay-per-view. Thought it was a very good match. It's the best just straight-up wrestling match I've seen Eddie Kingston have since coming over to AEW. So part two is fine with me. We had CM Punk coming down to the ring for a promo after his win over Darby Allin at All Out. He is still soaking up these crowd reactions, man. You could tell, like, you just look at this guy when he walks out, the smile on his face. He can't help himself. You could just read his face and see how happy he is and how into this he is, which is cool to see. Because I remember grumpy, grouchy Punk from 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And here, he's like a totally different person, which is cool to see. So he comes out, and actually I wrote down he came out of the heel tunnel. Usually the tunnel on the left is for the heels, the tunnel on the right is for the baby faces. But then later on, the Elite came out of the right tunnel, so it's all the same shit. Doesn't mean anything. Punk came out, he thanked Darby Allin, he thanked Sting. He thanked all the fans. You're welcome. We got a loud chant of "You Still Got It." And he was getting all hyped up about Minoru Suzuki making an appearance later in the show, which led to a big John Moxley chant. He looked out into the front row and he drew attention to Aunt Linda. First, I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? Is Linda McMahon in the front row? Who is he talking about? And then they showed her, and then I instantly remembered it was Linda, Brian Pillman Jr.'s aunt from Dark Side of the Ring. And sure enough, Punk said, you know, he mentioned Dark Side of the Ring. He saw her on there and said that she truly is an angel. If you saw the episode on Brian Pillman, Dark Side of the Ring, if you haven't, you should. They do interview her and talk about her, and I mean, this woman has been a godsend to Brian's kids after he passed away. She was Pillman's sister. And she basically took his kids in, basically. And gave them, you know, a normal home and a lot of love. And she just came off as the sweetest woman in the world. So that was really cool for her to be there and to get that kind of, you know, attention from Punk, I thought was really cool. Although later on, I think the reason they did that probably had to do with what was coming up later with MJF, where they wanted everybody to kind of know who she was. But I thought that was really cool. So Punk is talking about all the big things that happened at All Out. Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, Ruby Soho. And then he says, look, you know, I got a text message from my wife, April, after my match saying what's next. So he thought he would come out here tonight and he would leave it in the hands of the fans here in Cincinnati. What do you guys think? What should be next for CM Punk? And people start chanting Moxley. So as all of this is going on commentary, you can hear Taz go, all right, I've had enough. Give me a microphone. And Taz interrupts, and Punk is appalled by this. He goes, I have respect for you, so I'll allow it this time, but in the future, don't interrupt me again. And Taz said he's tired of this bullshit love fest that Punk has going on. He warned Punk to never mention any members of Team Taz, which was bewildering to Punk, who said, I never brought up any members of Team Taz. And Taz said, no, you did. You've been doing a million friggin' media interviews for the last few weeks, and I've heard you mention the members of Team Taz, which is true. You know, because when Punk has been asked, who are some of the young faces you'd like to work with in AEW, he has singled out Ricky Starks. I don't think he mentioned Hook, but he's mentioned Ricky Starks, and he's mentioned Will Hobbs. So that is true. Because I was wondering the same thing. I said, what the fuck is this guy talking about? And then he mentioned the media interviews, and I said, as a matter of fact, he did name drop those guys. So, again, he warned him, keep their names out of your mouth. Out comes Will Hobbs and Hook. They suddenly walk out from the tunnel. And Punk said, you know what? Send me Starks. Send me Hook. Send me Hobbs. And then he borrowed a page from Taz's playbook, one of his old catchphrases. He said, beat me if you can, survive if I let you. And that's pretty much how the segment ended. They clearly ran short here because they start playing Punk's music. Punk is just sort of standing around. The guys on stage are standing around. Taz is standing there. He's got the mic. They start playing Punk's music. And the show came to a standstill. So right from this segment, it looked like there was time management issues going on here, and they were just trying to stall and wait and wait. And Punk went around the ring, and he was fist bumping all the fans. And then when he got up on stage, he had, you know, a little stare down with the Team Taz guys, and then he left. I don't know if you noticed, Punk almost walked into the set. he was walking backwards, and he turned around. He almost walked into the fucking lights, which would have been very embarrassing. And then he walked through the tunnel. I have no issue with CM Punk working with more of the younger guys. I saw some people tweeted me, and they were saying, oh, well, you know, this is beneath Punk. Why is he working with Team Taz and calling out Hook and Ricky Starks? He should be, you know, mixing it up with the main event guys. Well, Bryan Danielson is mixing it up with the main event guys. Adam Cole is part of that mix as well. Not everybody has to be immediately thrust into the main event mix. All three of them do not need to be working with each other. So I'm perfectly fine if Punk wants to work with people like Darby Allin, people like Jungle Boy, people like Ricky Starks, and others. I think it's a smart move. Now, is he going to beat all of them and win all of his matches? Probably. I mean, at some point he'll lose, but I still say you can't be beating CM Punk just yet. But I like the idea of him working with a lot of these guys. I say, you know what, they didn't announce it, but I say do Punk and Starks in New York City. 2 weeks. They can announce it this Friday. They can announce it next Wednesday on Dynamite. 2 weeks. Arthur Ashe, CM Punk in the ring, one-on-one against Ricky Starks. That's what I would do. And it doesn't have to be for the FTW title. It should not be for the FTW title. That's completely unnecessary. That is beneath Punk. It's beneath him. It's unnecessary. He's not going to win it. So you make it non-title. You do the match one-on-one. The only thing that has me thinking maybe it's not going to happen is the fact that later on in the show, they did do a little video package teasing a match with Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. That whole issue is not over yet. I don't know why. I'm kind of over it at this point. I think Starks should move on. Maybe they do Starks and Cage instead of Starks and Punk. But Punk called him out. And I think if you can get Punk in the ring for a match at Arthur Ashe, That would be the match to do. It's the match I'd like to see. We had a package with Santana and Ortiz talking about how their feud with FTR sparked something within them. Hey, Wet Sox just became a channel member. What's going on, Wet Sox? That's one of the worst things I hate. I don't hate you, but I hate Wet Sox. Isn't that the fucking worst? That happened to me yesterday. I don't know what I stepped in. I think I dropped an ice cube or something. I had like a little puddle on the floor. I was wearing socks. I go, ah, shit. It's the fucking worst. Ah, but not you. Not you, Wet Sox. Thank you for joining. But Santana and Ortiz, they said they're turning their attention now to the rest of the tag team division. So it looks like this issue with them and FTR, even though they were one win apiece, it looks like it's over. Just based on the way they were talking here in this video, I thought they would build to one more match. Santana and Ortiz would win, and then they would move on, and it doesn't look like that's necessarily going to be the case. But it's about time that Santana and Ortiz, you know, they broke away from the Inner Circle stuff on their own and really started showing what they can do in that tag team division. And so maybe they're not going to win the titles in Queens in a couple of weeks, but they should definitely be in a match on that show. Ruby Soho was backstage earlier with Tony Schiavone. Britt Baker interrupted with Rebel and Jamie Hayter, who was wrestling Ruby later in the show. Britt called her the flavor of the month, and Ruby told Tony that she was one of the people who helped break Britt. try saying that. She was one of the people who tried to break Britt Baker, there we go, into the wrestling business, which I guess Tony Schiavone did not know. I didn't know that either. And she thinks that Britt's got all these nicknames. She calls herself the baddest bitch and all this other stuff, a role model. She has all these nicknames as a defense against letting people know the kind of person that she really is. Britt said that Ruby calls herself the runaway. And she said, why don't you go run away back to catering where you've spent the last 4 years of your career? That got a big reaction out of the crowd. So the heels walked off and Ruby told Tony Schiavone, I know she's your girl, but I'm going to whoop her ass. And she walked away. Powerhouse Hobbs was still out there. He never left. Once he came out in the earlier segment, he had come down to the ring. He must have been standing in the ring the entire time. It's like, if you've ever been to any of these WWE shows, and I haven't been to one in a while, but I used to go to Raw, and somebody would come out for a match. They'd be standing in the ring, so you'd see the first like part of their entrance. They go to commercial. So now there's like a 3 or 4 minute commercial break, right? They come back, and then they show you like 3 or 4 straight promos in the back or video packages. Meanwhile, this poor woman or man or whoever it is in the ring is standing there like a, and I'm watching this in the building, and they're just in the dark, standing there like a schmuck. Until finally they're ready to come back to the ring. They've been standing there for like 15 minutes. That was Powerhouse Hobbs. They finally came back to him, and he was in the ring. Hook was in his corner. It was Hobbs one-on-one against Dante Martin of Top Flight, who's been getting quite the little singles push for himself. Since his brother went down with the ACL injury, he's still out. So Dante hit a drop kick that sent Hobbs to the floor. He tried to follow it up with a tope through the ropes. This was my favorite spot of the match. Dante Martin comes sailing through the ropes. Before he could completely clear the ropes, though, Hobbs catches him. Now, Dante's feet are still hanging on the rope, but Hobbs has him. And he throws him into the ring post. That was a cool spot. I like that. They go to break. They come back. Dante now is making a comeback of his own, shotgun drop kick, running senton for a near fall. Hobbs rolls out to the floor. So Dante is going to go for another tope. It's his favorite fucking move. He's going to go for another dive out of the ring. Hook jumps up on the apron to stop him. And Hook is standing there, and Dante's like, oh, man, I guess I can dive. He goes, oh, wait, no, I could. Hits the ropes. He does a dive anyway. Over Hook's head. He jumps over Hook, and he lands on Hobbs, and he caught Hobbs a little too well. He nailed him right in the head, and when Hobbs fell backwards, so he was already probably knocked loopy, but then he fell backwards, and his head bounced off the ground. And if you watch his body, it almost looks like his body stiffened up a little bit. Because I could tell as soon as he hit him, even before he fell, it looked pretty nasty. Once he fell, I'm watching to see his body. And you can see it kind of stiffened up a little bit, which is what happens when you're knocked legitimately loopy. Maybe you're concussed. Maybe he's not. I hope he wasn't. But if we come to find out that he's going to be out for a week or two or whatever because he got concussed, I would not at all be surprised. Either way, he was definitely on Dream Street. That was not him selling. I'll guarantee you that was not him selling. He got knocked for a loop. So he was very slow to get back up, and Dante had to struggle. He had to struggle, but he rolled him into the ring, and he was out of it. You could tell. Hobbs was out of it. Dante hit a running kick. Hobbs did manage to hit his spine buster. I don't think that was the finish. That's just me guessing. It didn't feel like under normal circumstances that would have been what he finished him off with. Even though I think he's won, some matches with the spine buster, but whether it was the planned finish or not, at least they called an end to it there, thankfully. I thought Dante Martin looked good. He's been getting a lot of attention. He's been, getting a lot of ring time as a singles. There was no way, though, he was winning this. Especially given what they just did in the segment before this, right? I mean, they were just teasing the possibility that Hobbs could be an opponent for CM Punk. So if they're teasing him as a potential opponent for Punk, he's not going in there and losing to Dante Martin. So it's one of those matches where there really is no drama as to who's going to win. But that one spot that I mentioned, I thought that was the cool part of the match. And hopefully the big man is okay, because that moment there looked very scary. Dan Lambert, hey, Thomas Coco, just subscribe to the channel. Look at Asuka. I love it. Thank you, Thomas. We're inching our way closer to 65,000. I can't do it without you guys. Dan Lambert was up in one of the boxes again. He was flanked by Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, the men of the year. He referred to Punk, Danielson, and Adam Cole, all the new signees, as skinny little dorks that keep this company from the truth, which is that this company has only two real men wrestling for it, that, of course, being Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. And if there are any tough guys who would like to shut them up, it would be best to do so sooner rather than later, and he looks forward. He looks forward to the day that he does not have to hear that dreadful chant of AEW, which of course led to the crowd starting to chant AEW, and that was the segment. So not really breaking any new ground here. We've seen this segment from Lambert now about three or four times. I don't know if he's going to start managing Page and Sky when they start actually having matches on Dynamite and Rampage, if he'll be in their corner and he's going to officially be their new manager. I don't know. I don't know what their plans are for him going forward, if he's going to bring more people in. I'm waiting to see, because right now this is just, I don't really care about any of this. Dan Lambert can cut a great promo, but I can't say that this is really doing anything to excite me. MJF is out next off of his loss to Chris Jericho, who is not on the show tonight. So Jericho won. He wasn't on the show. MJF lost. He was on the show, but thankfully he was on the show. I'd rather have him on here than Jericho anyway. So MJF comes out to the ring with Wardlow, licking his wounds after his loss. And he says he beat Chris Jericho three times heading into this match on Sunday. Three times he won, and then he beat him a fourth time. Says he beat him a fourth time. Orion Gaming, thank you for the sub. However, after the bell, the match was restarted due to extreme bias against him. It's like I said during my review. The man got screwed. I had people say, no, Solomon's, because I thought Jericho, his foot was late on the bottom rope. And I had a few people tell me, no, it was close, but you got to go back and rewatch it. He got his foot on the rope in time. I went back and I watched it. He probably did, but it was close enough where, as I'm in the moment watching it, it looked late. So you may be right. But at the time, it looked to me like he was maybe a split second late. And I said, MJF really did get screwed. He has every right to complain about it. And he is. That's what he's doing. He's complaining about it. So then he insulted Cincinnati, and he said, oh, a lot of people are going to say that this is cheap heat. Cheap heat. You're all a bunch of marks. I could do without the insider stuff. He said Cincinnati is called the Midwest because everything within is mid, including Skyline Chili and the Cincinnati Reds. Well, can't argue that. He dared people to jump the guardrail, said they won't because they're all cowards. I don't think that's a very smart thing to be doing. I wouldn't be doing that. He turned his attention to Aunt Linda. Aunt Linda, who Punk pointed out earlier on. And she was in the front row, as I mentioned, and he threatened to knock her teeth down her throat. Then he turned his ire on Brian Pillman's daughter. Brian Pillman's daughter was right next to Aunt Linda in the front row. And MJF called her. He goes, hey, 16 and pregnant. I don't know why, but that line broke me. That got me. I openly laughed at that line. 16 and pregnant, he called her. And he insulted her a little bit more. I think he called her ugly. This brought out Brian Pillman Jr., who seemed more excited about coming out. He was smiling. He was so happy to be in front of his hometown fans. You know, you would think he would come out and he would be angry about what MJF just said to his aunt and to his sister. But boy, he was just coming out there like, oh man, this is great. Look at this. This crowd is all about me. This is so great. And then he finally started cutting a promo on MJF. And he addressed him as Maxwell Jerkoff Friedman. Called Cincinnati a city that breeds badasses like Brian Pillman and Jon Moxley. He said MJF had a silver spoon upbringing. And he probably thinks where he grew up was the greatest place on earth. And he said, welcome to the jungle. And MJF called out, well, once he got into the ring. So Pillman got into the ring. And I could already see where this was going. And actually, he didn't go where I thought it would go. I thought that he was going to start pulling out references to Pillman, you know, his father killing himself with drugs and stuff like that. He didn't go there. He didn't really go after Brian Pillman. But he did mention Pillman's wife, Pillman Jr.'s mom, Melanie. And he called her out as his drug-addicted mother, Methany. Well, look, if you saw the Dark Side of the Ring special, I mean, let's be honest. I think that was the first thought that a lot of people had watching that. She definitely looks like she's had a rough go of it over the years. He called her Methany. And Pillman was very upset. Wardlow was holding him back, though. That wasn't enough to really get him that angry that he would just, you know, kind of go through Wardlow and get to him. He called her Methany. And then he made the comment that she should have swallowed Pillman Jr. like she did all the other kids that she almost had. And that was pretty much what finally set him off. Actually, what set him off ultimately was the final line. And he barely got the words out before Pillman double-legged him and took him down. I almost forgot, but he made the comment about, you know, he's going to do what Pillman's mom should have done to him 28 years ago, which is abort him. And at that moment, as soon as he said abort him, he took him down. He double-legged him and took him down. Wardlow shoved him away. MJF, in all of this, sarcastically made the comment to Wardlow about, oh, now you want to help me like you helped me on Sunday? Because Wardlow tried to come out and help him on Sunday, but Jake Hager came out and they brawled to the back. So I thought this was the moment that would be the straw that broke the camel's back for Wardlow. They have dropped hints of this already. Now, they don't do it every week. But every now and then, MJF will yell at Wardlow, or he'll call him out for something that he did, or a mistake that he made. And I thought, okay, this is almost like the Raw after WrestleMania, right? This is their big Dynamite after All Out. Maybe this is going to be the big angle where Wardlow finally has had enough of MJF, and they do the breakup tonight, but they didn't do it. It's coming. They're building to it. They're still building to it after all these months. So it's coming, but they didn't do it tonight. I thought maybe in this segment they would do it. Because Wardlow definitely did not seem amused when MJF made that comment. But he didn't attack him. He didn't do anything. Pillman went back after MJF. Wardlow took his time this time. He took a few extra seconds before he went over to save MJF. Griff Garrison ran down. He was immediately clotheslined out of his shoes. And Wardlow picked him up so that MJF could hit him with the Dynamite Diamond Ring. And I see that that's the moment where I thought it would happen. I thought for sure Garrison was going to duck. And MJF was going to accidentally hit Wardlow with the ring. And either Wardlow would go after him or Wardlow would say, you know, fuck this, I'm out of here. But again, he didn't do it. He hit Garrison with the ring. And that was pretty much the entire segment. Later in the show, Pillman was in the back with Griff. Griff was being iced down in the trainer's room, and Pillman said that he went to Tony Khan and he got a match against MJF for Arthur Ashe Stadium on September 22nd. So they are going to have a match in 2 weeks. The Acclaimed walked in to present Pillman with some red roses. Max Caster said he too went to Tony Khan. Well, he probably went to Tony Khan to get his rap approved. That's number one. But while he was having his rap lyrics approved, he went to Tony Khan and politicked into his own match, which is a match against Brian Pillman Jr. this Friday on Dynamite. So that's what Pillman, they didn't present this as you have to beat Max Caster to get the match with MJF, but he's going to have a match with Caster on TV this week. And I guess that's going to be there. Well, it's twofold. Number one, Rampage is taped this week. Rampage is not live. So as we speak, as I am doing this stream, they are taping the matches for Rampage, which is going to include Pac and Andrade, and the match between MJF and Max Caster, or Pillman and Max Caster, because they're in Cincinnati. So they probably wanted to give Pillman a match in his hometown, and they'll give him a win. No reason to beat him, right? He should get a solid win going into the match with MJF in a couple of weeks. So that's why they're doing that on Rampage this week. And I'm all for them giving a little singles push to Brian Pillman. This was his first real chance to come out here in front of a crowd live on TV and, you know, cut the kind of promo that we saw from him tonight. I thought he did a fine job. And now he's going to have a big match on one of AEW's biggest shows of the year in front of the single biggest crowd in AEW history. So I don't know if it's going to be a sustained push. I don't know if he's actually going to beat MJF. If they're going to work an angle where Wardlow, you know, inadvertently cost him the match, maybe that's where they do the breakup. Wardlow would get a tremendous reaction in Long Island or Long Island. I'm thinking of the show in December that they just announced. In Queens, in New York. We'll say New York. That covers Queens and Long Island. But if they do the turn there, he'll get a huge reaction. So maybe that's what they're saving it for. Maybe in 2 weeks, Wardlow is finally going to break away from MJF. I've said this for the longest time. I have said that when the time comes that Wardlow splits away from MJF, he's going to be a big babyface. Now, I didn't know that they would be bringing in CM Punk and Bryan Danielson. And so Wardlow, it almost feels like an afterthought at this point. That's on Tony Khan. That's the challenge that lies before Tony Khan. The challenge that lies before Tony Khan, and I think he's done a good job so far of having these big names, whether it's Danielson with Jurassic Express, whether it's Sting with Darby, mixing old and new together to give new some of that rub. But he's going to have to balance things going forward. Hangman Page is going to come back, and Hangman Page should take a backseat to nobody. I don't care if your name is CM Punk or Bryan Danielson. Whether it's Arthur Ashe, whether it's next month, whether it's in November, whenever Hangman Page comes back, he needs to go right after Kenny Omega, and he needs to be the one to take that championship from Omega. He's their guy. He's the one that needs to be pushed into that position. When it comes to some of these, you know, these other names that you could call AEW originals if you want to, the younger guys, and I would put Wardlow in that category. You know, when the day comes and he turns, and if he gets over as a big babyface like I think he will, they're going to have to really push him as a top babyface. Push him to the top. You can't just have the big names that are already big names at the top. You got to also use them to work some of these other ones. Even just pick three of them. Maybe it's Wardlow, Hangman Page, and Darby Allin. Maybe it's Hangman Page and Sammy Guevara and somebody else. But you want to use them to elevate some of your guys. I think Tony Khan is aware of this. Just the way that he has, you know, booked a lot of these people so far, I think is smart. But he's got to continue to do that. And again, for the love of God, do not allow Hangman Page to fall to the wayside, because that would be the biggest tragedy of it all here. Is in all the hoopla and the excitement about all these guys coming in, and I think it's great, and I think it's cool, and I think it's great to get, you know, these are really talented guys that are coming into the company right now. And there's a lot of news today about Kevin Owens, and potentially Kevin Owens could be on his way out of WWE in a few months. And if that's the case, would he go to AEW? Of course he would go to AEW. That's where all of his buddies are. You don't think Tony Khan wouldn't want somebody like Kevin Owens? People say, oh, well, when is enough enough? How many ex-WWE guys are you going to sign? Well, there are certain guys who, if they become available and if they're interested, you would be a fool not to bring them in. Kevin Owens would be one of those people. I'd put Sami Zayn in that same category. There's some question about when his deal might be up. It's going to be a very interesting next few months. But don't do that at the expense of the younger guys that you already have who could be big stars. And we saw a lot of them on the show tonight. We saw Ricky Starks briefly, but we did see him on the show tonight, among others. That's the challenge for Tony Khan. Ruby Soho making her AEW Dynamite debut. Got another really good reaction here coming out in front of this crowd in Cincinnati, which was very nice to see. One-on-one against Jamie Hayter. She grabbed the shoulder. Right away, Ruby grabs a shoulder and she's wrenching on it. Hits a knee strike. Jamie breaks free and sent Ruby throat first, really violently, throat first into the bottom rope. That led into a commercial break. We come back and Ruby sends Hayter into the second turnbuckle with her knees. Hits a series of kicks to the head. Ruby countered a hot shot attempt into a tornado DDT for a near fall. Ruby went for a Saito suplex. Hayter blocked it, and she picked up Ruby in the electric chair position. And this is where we had a botch. Who was responsible for this botch? Looked like Jamie Hayter probably, but I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. To me, it looked like she was going for a poison Rana. And I don't know if Ruby hesitated because she was kind of falling backwards very, very slowly. And so maybe it was her fault. Maybe she hesitated. And Jamie Hayter didn't know what to do. The point is, she didn't go over for the poison Rana, if that's what they were trying. She sort of fell over. Like, almost twisted and fell over. This very awkward spot. It did not look good. It definitely got fucked up by somebody somehow. So that didn't look too good. Hayter hit an Ushigaroshi followed by a sliding clothesline for an ear fall. But Ruby recovered and she hit a kick to the side of the head and she got the pin. 1, 2, 3, Ruby Riot, Ruby Soho. Caught myself. Wins her first Dynamite match. I thought there were some clumsy moments here, even in the post-match. You know, Britt Baker jumps in the ring and she's attacking Ruby as soon as the bell rings to end the match. There's Britt Baker. She attacks Ruby. Here comes Riho, who was never eliminated, by the way. She was never eliminated from the Casino Battle Royal at All Out. She was doing a spot with Jamie Hayter. She went out under the bottom rope. It looked like Jamie Hayter was trying to get the referee's attention to let them know, hey, she went under the bottom rope. The rules were that you have to go over the top rope. Nobody was listening to her. And so I guess Riho was eliminated. Riho went on social media earlier and she said that, you know, under the bottom rope, I think is what she wrote. So she came out here because Jamie Hayter is the one who eliminated, but not really, eliminated her from the Battle Royal. As soon as Riho got into the ring, Hayter took her out with a backbreaker across the knee. Britt went to curb stomp Ruby onto the women's championship belt. And Chris Statlander ran out with a chair. So this is obviously setting up a six-woman tag. I don't know when, if it's going to be... Well, actually, did they announce that? I think they did, actually. Hold on a second. I very quickly, at the end of the night, I just jotted down the lineup for Rampage. Yeah, there it is. That's right. I couldn't remember if it was Dynamite or Rampage. It's Rampage this Friday. They're going to do the six-woman tag. So there you go. I just answered my own question. So that's what we're building to. Not the best match. Not the best match. But a good night for Ruby because she got a great reaction. The people are into her. She got a win. Onward and upward. There's a lot of other women for her to work with on this roster. She'll have a lot of other opportunities. She'll be on TV again on Friday. But there were some clumsy moments here in this match. Earlier today, the Dark Order were being interviewed about their problems. Problems within. Evil Uno said they're fine. Alan Angels got hot about that. All of a sudden, Anna Jay walks up and she starts yelling at everybody. Shit. Make Anna Jay the new leader. She could be the de facto leader of the group since Negative One is not around, I guess. Is Negative One on summer vacation? Is he back in school yet? We haven't seen, maybe he's been on Dark. We haven't seen Negative One on Dynamite. Dax Harwood, Cash Wheeler, Sean Spears, with Tully Blanchard and Wardlow in their corner, out for a six-man tag against the Dark Order, Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, and John Silver. Silver immediately blind tagged himself in. Spears knocked him down with a shoulder tackle. So Silver came back with a body slam. He pulled Spears into the corner for a tag and hesitated before bringing in Stu Grayson. And Grayson was forced into the heels corner before he took out Spears with a backflip kick. Grayson and Uno hit a combo elbow drop slam for a near fall. So skip ahead here a little bit. Silver is in there, and he is at a severe disadvantage. 3-on-1. Pinnacle hit a modified C4 on John Silver for the win. Stu Grayson was late coming in to try to break up the fall. And so that led to more angst among the members of the Dark Order. Things are falling apart here for the Dark Order. I know you're devastated by this development. So am I. I mean, we certainly can't have that now. We can't have the Dark Order falling apart. No. Colt Cabana came out. Other Dark Order members came out trying to hold each other back. All of a sudden, they start fighting each other, right? We had Uno gets in Silver's face. Silver took out Uno. Grayson and Angels were upset. Preston Vance and Colt Cabana tried to cool everybody off. So there is trouble in the ranks of the Dark Order. Where it goes, I don't know. But if it were to lead to the end of the Dark Order, and I don't think it will. I think there'll be some kind of unifying force that comes in here and harmony will eventually be restored. But if it were the end of the Dark Order, I mean, I'm trying to think. For a lot of the guys in that group, it might not be such a good thing. Being in the Dark Order is probably very beneficial to some of the people that are in that group and get them the TV time that they get. So I don't know that breaking them up would be great for the people in the group. I look at that group and I say, who would be the big breakout star of the Dark Order if they went out on their own? It's not going to be Evil Uno. It's not going to be Stu Grayson. As great as Grayson is very good, but it's not going to be him. Preston Vance, he's one of those young guys who they seem to like. You got to get the mask off him if he's going to go off on his own. He can't keep that mask on. Colt Cabana, no. Colt Cabana is not going nowhere. Colt Cabana, if they want to have Colt Cabana on there as a veteran presence on the roster, but Colt Cabana is not going to be a singles force in this company, nor should he be. Look at the talent they have right now. All due respect to Colt Cabana, he's going to be very low in the pecking order there. Honestly, the biggest stars are Ty Conti and Anna Jay. They're the ones I'd like to see more of. They're the ones I think that have the best shot, frankly. And John Silver, right? Everybody loves John Silver. But I don't know where they're going with it. Tully Blanchard was backstage after the match. And he was with Tony Schiavone. And he said, everybody just saw an example of leadership out there in the ring. He wants Tony Khan to book Darby Allin one-on-one against Sean Spears next week. And at some point, he teased that it will be Tully Blanchard getting his hands on Sting one-on-one. At some point, he said, he and Sting are going to get it on one more time. And as he talked about that, I just thought to myself, well, it's a safe opponent for Sting is really the best thing I can say about it. I like Tully in his current role as the manager, as the mouthpiece. And Tully has got to be, what, mid to late 60s, I think, at this point. Relative to a lot of the other legends who are around the same age, he moves around pretty good. I've seen him a couple of times come off the middle rope, helping FTR do the stuff pile driver, right? Landing right on his knees. So he moves around pretty good for a guy who has had the kind of career that he's had, taken the bumps that he's taken, as old as he is. But do I need to see Tully Blanchard wrestling in singles matches? I don't. I guess there's nostalgia for some people in seeing Sting and Tully in the ring one-on-one. You know, it makes me wonder if maybe Ric Flair is going to come in to make at least one appearance. He's going to be part of that somehow. You know that Ric Flair is dying to get back in the ring one more time to do a match with Sting. I mean, think about it, right? Sting and Flair, they were in the ring together back when the NWA, it was still NWA, even before they were calling it WCW. They had tons of matches in WCW, including the final match, in fact, on the final Nitro. They wrestled each other in Impact. So the allure of potentially doing one final Sting Ric Flair match, this time in AEW, you know, to him, it has to be very appealing. Do I have any interest in seeing it? No. No, I do not. I do not want to see Ric Flair back in the ring. But him making an appearance, maybe this is what this is building to. Something with Sting and the Horsemen. I don't know. It just has me thinking Flair. That Flair might be involved in this in some way. So then we had the Elite. They were out next. Okay, the Elite seems to be getting bigger and bigger every week. Like the NWO in the later years, where it seemingly got bigger and bigger. Oh, look, there's Vincent, and there's Bryan Adams, and there's Scott Norton, and there's Conan, and there's, the janitor, and here's Michael Wall Street. You know, everybody joined the NWO. The Elite is quickly approaching. They're not there yet, but they're getting there. I don't need to be seeing the Good Brothers on television every week. Are the Good Brothers even in Impact anymore? They're the Impact Tag Team Champions. I feel like they spend more time on AEW television than they do on Impact television. Who do they work for at this point? Do they have a double contract? We don't need to be seeing the Good Brothers on TV this much. A powerful one. Thank you, man, for that super chat. I'm going to be reading all of your super chats. So if you got thoughts on this show tonight or anything else going on or the PWI 500 or anything you want to vent about, you want to support the channel, send them on in. We're going to have a super chat party here in just a few minutes. But the Elite came out without Adam Cole. Kenny Omega was there. Don Callis was there. The Young Bucks were there. Michael Nakazawa was there. Brandon Cutler was there. Who else there? Who do I miss? Did I miss anybody? I think that's all of them. So, Nick Jackson did the introduction for Adam Cole. They gave him his own entrance so he can come out to his brand new theme music, which is good. It's growing on me. I still prefer the Undisputed Era theme, but his music here in AEW is light years ahead of whatever the fuck they gave him in his final months in NXT. That music sucked. This is just leaps and bounds better than what he was coming out to in his final months on NXT. So here comes Adam Cole. And the first thing he does, because Tony Schiavone was going to conduct the interview in the ring, and of course the first thing that happened is Don Callis takes the microphone away from him. But Schiavone is still in the ring, and Adam Cole goes over to Tony and he says, if you even look at Britt Baker, if you even look at her the wrong way, he says, I will slap those glasses off your face and whoop your ass. And he told him to get out of the ring. And Tony was taking his sweet time to get out of the ring. Called him a nerd. Yes, the guy from Twitch who calls himself Chugs is calling Tony Schiavone a nerd. But he called him a nerd a whole bunch of times as Tony took his time getting out of the ring. And Cole said, it's story time with Adam Cole. And he says, you know, I may be new to AEW, but I've been in the Elite for a very long time. He He also said that AEW was the greatest professional wrestling company in the world. And he said that he's been in the Elite for a very long time. He's a once-in-a-generation pro wrestler. He is with the very best. He said the fans should be thanking them because now the Elite is complete. So next week, he said he's going to make his in-ring debut on Dynamite, which he will. He'll be wrestling Frankie Kazarian. And Kenny Omega took the mic. He said that that sounds like a cause for celebration, but he hates interruptions. So naturally, as soon as he said that, we hear Ride of the Valkyries, and here comes Bryan Danielson. And I love how this time the graphics on the screen said the American Dragon. So the American Dragon is back. You start calling him that again. And Omega cleared the ring and paved the way for Danielson to come on in to confront him in the middle of the ring. And Danielson snatched the microphone out of his hand, and he asked the fans if they wanted to see Bryan Danielson fight Kenny Omega. And of course, they responded in the affirmative. He said Omega talks about being the best wrestler in the world, but he is afraid of Danielson. He goes, "You are not on my level." Danielson stopped the attack when Kenny went to attack. He put the lapel lock on. The Elite got in the ring. Brandon Cutler was spraying cold spray, which had no effect because Bryan Danielson's like, "Fuck you and your stupid can of air." But they all ganged up on him, and it was the numbers game. Out comes Christian Cage. Here comes Frankie Kazarian. Here comes Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus to make the save. And Cole took a little bit of a nasty spill out of the ring by Kazarian. But again, they're going to face each other on Dynamite next week. Luchasaurus picked up Marco Stunt and threw him out of the ring onto the pile. Jungle Boy hit this huge dive out to the floor. Everybody was going nuts. And so Brandon Cutler was on hands and knees all by himself, surrounded by all the baby faces in the middle of the ring. And Bryan Danielson gave him the running knee, and he posed to end the segment. So they're going right into it. They're not wasting any time. They are going right to Danielson and Omega, which is the biggest match they could do as far as Danielson goes, right? Other than Danielson and Punk, which I'm looking forward to that as well. Seeing that again, it's been many years. It's been long enough that I'm looking forward again to seeing those two get in the ring together. I'm also looking forward to seeing CM Punk and Bryan Danielson team up at some point to wrestle the Young Bucks. I think that's a huge tag team match that they could promote, probably for a pay-per-view. But they do so few pay-per-views. They only do 4 pay-per-views a year. Do you really want to burn one of them on a tag team match with Punk and Danielson when there's so many different singles matches with them that you could be doing? So more than likely, that would be either like just a really big Dynamite main event. Or don't forget, Tony Khan, when the news was announced that Dynamite would be moving to TBS next year and Rampage, that part of the agreement is that on TNT, AEW is going to have some quarterly specials. Probably in the vein of the old Clash of the Champions shows that WCW used to do, or Saturday Night's Main Event. So if that's the case, you could do a match like that on one of the quarterly TNT shows next year. But that would be a huge match. It's a lot of possibilities. When you write these names down on paper, or you type them out in a document, and you look at the roster that they have in AEW, you can say, oh, it's too big, it's bloated. It is getting bloated, but you know they're not yet at that point where I feel like, all right, it's like we've reached the point of no return here. They have a lot of talent. And there's a lot of fresh matches that you could do, singles-wise, tag-team-wise. That's what makes it exciting. You want to see Adam Cole with all these different people. You want to see Bryan Danielson with all these people and Punk. You could put Punk with Danielson as a team. You could, you know, put them in the ring against each other. There's a lot of different possibilities here. And they're not done yet. They are not done making acquisitions yet. So would they do the match at Arthur Ashe in 2 weeks? That's what I wrote down here. Would they do the match at Arthur Ashe in 2 weeks? Or are they setting up for what we saw here at the end of this segment, which is Danielson, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, maybe Kazarian. So that would make it 8 against the Bucks and Kenny and Cole. And that's a big 8-man tag that they could do on TV if they want to. I think we're more likely to get that. If they do anything at Arthur Ashe involving these guys, it's probably going to be that and not necessarily a singles match with Danielson and Kenny. I think what they're doing is similar to what they did with Christian and Kenny Omega when Christian first came in. It was only like his second week, maybe? First or second week on TV? Remember? And he confronted Kenny Omega in the ring, and we thought, well, they're going to go right to Omega and Christian. Well, we ended up getting Omega and Christian, but we got it in September. And the only reason we got it in September was because Hangman Page was going away because he was having a kid. Well, I guess they did the first match on Rampage, though, for the Impact title. So maybe it's just a tease, but they're not actually going to give it to us yet. That's also possible. But I would watch for that eight-man tag, possibly in New York. But Hangman Page should be back soon. I don't know if it'll be in time for New York or not, but if it is, 17,000 people, you play that music, right? All the cowboy shit chants, here comes Hangman Page. That would be an awfully good time to bring him back and start building to a title match for Full Gear in November, which I don't believe has a home right now. Since they moved the pay-per-view back by a week, it was going to be on November 6th. Now it's going to be November 13th. I don't believe Full Gear anymore is going to be in St. Louis. So we do not yet know what city it is going to be in. There are rumors, but that's all it is at this point. We don't know where Full Gear is going to be, but I still say that would be an awfully good time to have Hangman take the championship off of Omega. And that brings us to the main event of the evening, the match that I was looking forward to. I really was. I was looking forward very much to seeing this match ever since it was announced the other night. Jon Moxley, this was his big homecoming here in Cincinnati, one-on-one against New Japan Pro Wrestling's own Minoru Suzuki, wrestling live on TNT for the very first time. Nothing else mattered on this show. I was looking forward not only to the match, but I was looking forward to having Suzuki come out to his music and do his whole entrance and having the whole crowd chant the chorus. And here comes Suzuki. And as he's not even really down to the ring yet, they cut his fucking music off. And they go right into Wild Thing and Jon Moxley's entrance as he is coming out of the crowd. I'm sure they were running low on time. They were running long. You do what you got to do. But boy, that sucked. I was looking for, how do you cut off Suzuki's music? This is probably the one time that we're going to get to see him here on one of these shows. I don't know that they're ever going to bring him back again. It could be one and done. We had Kenta on TV for like 2 weeks and we never saw him again. And they cut his fucking entrance short. So that was a huge disappointment right there. Right off the bat, that we're getting off on the wrong foot. But then the bell rang and the match started and I felt a little bit better. Suzuki got holy shit chance for his entrance as he came out. This is awesome is what we heard in the building as the match began. Before they even touched, we had this is awesome chance. They go right into a strike exchange. We had dueling pump kicks to the face, one by Suzuki, one by Moxley. Suzuki just laughed it off. He just laughed it off and the crowd cheered. And Suzuki came in with the hard palm strikes. We had a chance of fuck him up, Moxley, fuck him up, as they went to the picture-in-picture. So they come back from break, and Moxley begins biting at Suzuki's face, and Suzuki returns the favor, starts biting his face. Moxley with a headbutt, Suzuki comes back with one of his own. Tony Schiavone, somewhere in here, dropped our first reference on AEW television to Suzuki Goon, which is his faction back in Japan, of which Lance Archer used to be, or is he still? Is he still part of Suzuki Goon? I guess, well, he wouldn't be, right? Because he's not in New Japan anymore. I don't know if he still is or not. That's a good question. Schiavone said he is a part of Suzuki Goon. I thought he used to be part of Suzuki Goon. But in any event, we didn't see Lance Archer on the show. Somewhere in here, Suzuki's right eye got busted open badly. And he was just bleeding, I mean, all around the eye, and it was dripping down his face. Moxley hit the paradigm shift, but he wanted him to get back up. He didn't pin him. Wanted him to get back to his feet, which he did. Moxley went for a clothesline. Suzuki does not go down. Moxley hits the ropes again. Another clothesline, and again, Suzuki does not go down. He's staggered. The momentum is taking him backwards, but he does not go down. Moxley comes off again, and Suzuki catches him with a perfect drop kick to the face. And Suzuki applies the choke, the rear choke. Moxley escapes it and hits the shittiest paradigm shift that you will ever see. This was not even a paradigm shift. He started doing this, I would say maybe, I don't know, a month or two, maybe a couple months ago. He started getting very lazy with the elevated paradigm shift. But at least in some cases, it does look kind of like a paradigm shift. It just doesn't look, you know, as devastating. This was a double underhook suplex. He beat Minoru Suzuki, blood pouring down his face, with a double underhook suplex, like a tiger suplex, basically. And he picks up the win. This needed more time. This needed more time. And I understand that if the show is running long, you know, they don't call the shots. They know how much time they have left in the show. And maybe it just couldn't have been helped. But I really wish they would have allotted more time for this. If they knew that they were going to run short, cut something. I don't even care what. Cut something and give this match more time. Because that's the one big complaint besides the entrance that I have about this. They gave this less than 10 minutes. I think they gave this about 7 or 8 minutes. And that was the main event, too. And Moxley in his hometown. So it should have been a bigger deal than it was. That, to me, was the most disappointing part of the whole thing. I wasn't expecting a match exactly like the one they had in Japan. That match was fucking great. And I'm pretty sure it got more than 8 minutes. But this did not get nearly enough time. What little we did get, I thought was fun. Hopefully Suzuki is fine. I mean, I'm sure he's fine. Fucking Minoru Suzuki. He's fine. You saw Terminator 2 Judgment Day, right? One of the greatest movies ever made. When the Terminator, the T-1000, right, he would be shot or blasted in half or something, and then he would slowly come back together. That's Minoru Suzuki. As soon as he got to the back, the blood just kind of just evaporated right back into his eye socket, and he was fine. So he'll be fine. But the sight of him with blood all over his face, it worked. It somehow made him look even more badass. Moxley goes into the crowd to celebrate with his people. And that is how they went off the air. Rampage on Friday has Pac one-on-one against Andrade El Idolo. Darby Allin and Sting will speak. Britt Baker, Rebel, and Jamie Hayter against Ruby Soho, Chris Statlander, and Riho. And Brian Pillman Jr. takes on Max Caster. Again, that show is being taped tonight. It will not be live on Friday. I will be live on Friday. They may not be live on Friday, but I'll be live on Friday with you. Talking about Rampage. Dynamite next week is in Newark, New Jersey. I can remember when they first announced that Newark show. That was going to be Blood and Guts last year. March 20-something, I think. Because they were going to be in Rochester. That was the first week, I think, of the pandemic shows. And that's where Brody Lee debuted, and that's his hometown, and that was going to be a big deal. And I think about a week or two later, they were doing Blood and Guts in Newark. And COVID just completely fucked everything up. And they rescheduled Newark, and they delayed it again and delayed it again. So this show next week has been a long time in the making. And there's nothing announced on the level of a Blood and Guts match. But they have Adam Cole one-on-one in his in-ring debut against Frankie Kazarian. We have Jade Cargill against Legit Layla Hirsch and Darby Allin against Sean Spears. So the fine folks in Newark, you don't get Blood and Guts, but we're going to give you Sean Spears. That's what we're going to give you. You got that to look forward to next week. Let's take a look at the poll. We have over 1,600 votes in so far, 86.5% thumbs up. We got about 13.5% thumbs down. And over in the live chat, the results are 90-10. Thumbs up ratio to thumbs down, 90% up, 10% down. So if you are in the chat right now, go ahead and vote. And if you are on Twitter, go ahead and vote at Solomonster. That is a place where all of the polls, I put my polls on Twitter. Somehow that is not explicit. Apparently that's allowed. So yes, I put my poll on Twitter every week. And people keep coming back for it. I want to thank everybody, by the way, who has subbed tonight, trying to get us that much closer to 65,000 subs here on the channel. And some of our new channel members, very much appreciate the support. Man, we this past weekend with All Out, you guys came out in full force. That was an incredible weekend. Again, we were up very late on, well, I guess Monday morning it was, right? Monday morning. Thank God it was Labor Day. I didn't really have to be up that early. Nayef Al-Safar, thank you, sir, for the $9.99. Yeah, Club Solo. Juan Ocampo in the chat says Club Solo. Is that what we're going to call this? State Markin with the $2. Love your work, Solomonster. Hit that like button. That's right. That's right. We got Myomes and Jose Pagan becoming channel members. Welcome to the family. Di Lorenzo says, hey, Solomonster. Completely unrelated, but what has happened to the art of the face turn? What was, in your mind, the last great face turn? Oh, my gosh. Last great face turn? I'm thinking of the double turn, WrestleMania 13. 1997. I'm sure there's been more since then. I mean, the art of the face turn, it depends on so many different factors. You have to have the right person for it, right? It's got to be the right situation, the right moments. You get that maximum reaction from the crowd. It is. I think in a lot of ways, it is a lost art. Ryan Spies, Tully against Sting in 2021. He says, let's fucking go. So he's excited. Ryan is excited about Sting and Tully Blanchard. B. Vinson, 86. I listened to the Chris Van Vliet podcast with Ivelisse, and it sounds like she's in a better place mentally. Do you see her getting a second chance in AEW, or is it too late? I used to be a huge advocate for someone, anyone giving Ivelisse a shot because she is talented, and I think she can contribute to any women's division, really, if she wanted to. But she has had so many chances in so many different places. I mean, look, I hope she finds work somewhere. But as far as AEW is concerned, I think that ship has sailed. You know, when you burn a bridge here, there, and everywhere, it's not easy to come back from that. And as far as AEW is concerned, do I see her coming back there? I don't. No, I don't. The Antagonist just wanted to support. I have not been able to. Who do you see beating Miro? I know there's no hurry, but who do you imagine pinning him? Love your show. I think Jungle Boy would be fine for that spot. It's a ways down the road, not something that's going to be happening in the next couple of months or anything like that, but I think you can build up Jungle Boy to become TNT champion. Absolutely. Ryan Spies. Who the fuck ran long that led to them cutting off Kazen Inari? That's what I want to know. That was such a disappointment tonight. I cannot begin to tell you. Chris Quillman, the difference between Adam Cole's music now compared to his latest NXT music is so drastic. I'm telling you, man, that, you know, look, I guess the whole thing with CFOs, I guess, are they the ones who did the Undisputed Era music? And they're trying to get away from a lot of that music, so I guess I kind of understand that. But that music they came up with for Cole there at the end was just fucking dog shit. So, yeah. It's a vast improvement over what he was coming out to before. Anthony Remy, what's going on? He says, okay, time for AEW to be 3 hours. No. 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 I enjoy AEW as much as you do, but we do not need 3 hours of Dynamite. That would be a horrible idea. We do have 3 hours of Dynamite already. It's called Rampage. They just divide it up and put it on a different night. That's what Raw should do. They already have 3 hours of Dynamite. We don't need more than that. DiLorenzo thought the show was all right. First time watching Dynamite since I had to do a COVID test. I need more Thunder Rosa. She is great. I agree. We need more Thunder Rosa on the show. Quintus... missed one here. Tuxedo T. Servo, one of our channel members. dropping $5. That MJF promo, that was surface of the sun levels of heat. MJF might need escorts out of the building tonight. I loved it. I loved the MJF promo. I already saw some people were offended by it. You know, I think there are certain people, if they did not have something to be offended by, they would not know what to do with themselves. And as soon as certain controversial words are mentioned, oh, that's offensive. There was nothing offensive about MJF's promo. This was a standard, he said it in his promo, cheap heat. Even still, it got him a lot of heat in the building. It got him hated by a lot of people, right? I don't think he stepped over the line. Mission accomplished. The man did his job. I enjoyed that. Quintus Brown, Cody better lose or New York City will riot. Now, they won't riot, but it would be, I think, the wrong decision. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the 10 spot. Jacob, hope you're having a good night. With Adam Cole now in the Elite, they feel so much more complete and fun to watch. Temjin Zephyr with the $20 Super Chat drop. Holy crap, Temjin. What's going on, my friend? We got, you'll notice here, I don't know if you could see it, the Heart Foundation logo. You got the classic WWF logo right there. I'm doing it up the right way. I'm going old school tonight. Temjin says, tomorrow is my birthday. Ironically, I share the same birthday as Brian Pillman Jr., so here's some birthday money. I'll be attending SmackDown at MSG this Friday. Be well to you and the chat. Well, everybody wish Temjin, who's with us every week, wish him a happy birthday. Let's get some birthday emojis going on in the chat. So happy birthday to Temjin. And it's right, SmackDown isn't Madison Square Garden this Friday. I will not be there, but I will be here, and I will be live as soon as Rampage goes off the air. And I don't know if we'll talk any of the MSG show or not, but we'll definitely be talking Rampage. Howard D. Just how new are Cult of Personality CM Punk, Yes, 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 Bryan Danielson, and Adam Cole, Bay Bay. They're all new. They're all new to AEW. What's your point? It's like a baseball player going from one team to a new city and having new players to play with, and new teammates, and new scenery to play in. I mean, if you don't think Punk's return, whether it was in WWE or whether it would have been in AEW, isn't a big deal, then you haven't been paying attention. So, when I say new, they're new to the AEW roster. Bryan Danielson working with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, or working with Kenny Omega, or even working with Adam Cole. We saw him and Adam Cole have one match on SmackDown, and that was only because half the roster got stranded in a foreign country. So, to answer your question, what's so new about them? Everything. Because they're in a totally new world now. And that's what makes it exciting. C-Lab, 4421. I hope everybody is having a great night. You're all awesome. Well, that's very nice of him to say that. So, C-Lab, thank you for the $5. Jake Rohald, which Young Bucks name do you prefer for Mr. Cornette? The Cucamonga Kids or the Hardly Boys? P.S. Thank you for for Mr. Solomonster from Sydney, Australia. Well, thank you, Jake. I mean, I think some of the nicknames are just fucking lame, right? Well, he calls, like, Pentagon Penthouse, and he calls Phoenix Felix. I mean, do people actually find that funny? I don't know what's so funny about that. As far as the Bucks go, the Hardly Boys, I think, is kind of clever. Right? First time I saw the Young Bucks, I figured, okay, they're just a bunch of Hardy Boy ripoffs, so... And now they've carved out their own niche over these years, whether you like them or not. I mean, they've tried to separate themselves away from that, but I guess the Hardly Boys is kind of clever, but I don't know. Some of the other names that he uses is just, I don't know. He's got to work on those names. Eric Dennis, thank you for becoming a channel member. Welcome to the family. This very dysfunctional family. Exercise and Freedom says, how do I join? Well, it's very simple. Down below this video, you'll see a button that says join. And that's going to be under pretty much every video on the channel. If you are not already a member, click the join button and you'll see a video of me pop up explaining what the tiers are and the perks are. And then you can choose which level you want to become a member at. That's it. It's just that simple. And then you're all signed up. You don't have to do anything else. Off Leather Wings. I knew something was wrong when it was almost 9:30 and neither the Elite or Cole segment or the main event had started yet. Yeah, somebody went long and unfortunately it ate into the main event and I'm pretty hot about it. Brandon Harbin is a brand new channel member. Welcome, Brandon. The Evil Sins dropping $4.99. Can't believe Kazen Inari was cut short. One segment went too long. In hindsight, Moxley and Suzuki should have been the match at All Out. Austin Rung. Is it Runge or Rung? I'm going to say Runge. Like grunge. PWI list was BS. Hook got robbed of his number one spot. Yeah, a lot of Hook fans out there. A lot of Hook fans. Dop Dop with the $5. I thought the main event was over before it started and the Hobbs and Dante match went too long. Do you think Cole or Brian should have started the show? Well, Cole and Brian were both in the same segment, so I don't know. Are you saying that should the Elite segment have opened the show? Maybe. Rodimus Prime with the 20 spot. Said it Sunday and I'll say it again. Minoru Suzuki versus anyone. I'm here for it. He is what I call the greatest madman alive today. Dried chicken without flavor. I bet Minoru Suzuki is going to go after the entire AEW production team for cutting his entrance theme short. Moxley Suzuki should have opened Dynamite. Yeah, if I'm in that production truck right now, I'm locking those doors. That's what I'm doing. Corbin Rogers, how about a countdown of the top 10 companies of all time? Like, where would TNA rank against AEW, giving the history, etc.? Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to do because some companies are gone, some companies are still around and growing and improving. Other companies are regressing and somehow getting worse, but I don't know about that. We'll see. I'll give that some thought. X Boogeyman 123. Anyone notice how AC, that's Adam Cole, let Gallows and Anderson out of his promo? I can see Cole turning on Kenny and then Kenny recruiting the two to reform Bullet Club. Yeah, I would leave that possibility open that, I don't know about Gallows and Anderson, but just the possibility that Cole is working them from within. I think there's some merit to the idea. It's possible. But I like the idea of Cole being with those guys. Somebody said it in their super chat before. It just feels right having him back in that group. So they should be together for a while. Brian Spies, did you see Tony Khan offered indie standout Lee Moriarty a contract during the Elevation tapings? Yes, I did see that. Boy, he's doling out these contracts like candy. Tony Khan is. He gave one to Fuego del Sol a few weeks ago. Coggies dropping $5. Just wish the main event went longer. So happy we got Suzuki on AEW. I agree. Hopefully the first of many other names that will be coming in the future. Future Endeavored. You look hilarious in a sharpshooter. He's working on some artwork. I don't know if it's done yet or not, but he's apparently working on something for me, so when he tweets it to me, I'll have to tweet it out and show everybody. I'm looking forward to this. Apparently, I'm getting an illustration of me being put in the sharpshooter by Bret Hart. So I'm very excited to see this. Wet Socks, best heel name I can think of. Badum Tiss. You definitely picked the heel name, that's for sure. Dan Richards working with CM Punk is the main event. That's one way to look at it. If that's the case, then Ricky Stark should absolutely want to work with CM Punk, right? Dry chicken without flavor. When Ruby Soho told Tony Schiavone that Britt Baker is his girl, I realized Ruby got Tony in trouble with Adam Cole during the Elite segment. Level 20 Facto 2 dropping $5 here on the stream. Excalibur was live tweeting Dynamite and he already is starting the Adam Cole fat jokes again. Dylan Hensley. Yes, Kenny Omega, number one in the top PWI 500 of 2021. Pretty hypocritical of WWE fans getting angry when they got smug with the Jim Ross Randy Orton incident. Bulu Fatulu, what's up, Solo Monster? Better movie, Speed 1994 or The Last Boy Scout 1991? Well, seeing as how I never saw The Last Boy Scout, I gotta go with Speed. Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock, Dennis Hopper, Jeff Daniels, great movie. EJ Slemp, Arn and Tully are full-time. Flair is probably coming in, and J.J. Dillon did a one-off. That leaves one horseman, Barry Windham. Do you think he'll come in? If they want to do a horseman reunion and get four of them with J.J., then you almost have to. Unless you're going to bring in Luger, Luger or Sid. I don't think they want to do that. Or fucking Paul Roma, who was barely in the horseman, right? So, if they want to do a full horseman reunion and get that visual, then they almost have to, I guess. I'm not going to bring in Oli. Oli will tell them all to go fuck themselves. Can you imagine Tony Khan picking up the phone to call Oli Anderson to see if he would be interested in coming in for a one-shot with the horseman? What do you think Ole Anderson's response would be to young Tony Khan? If Tony Khan somehow got his number and called him. And Ole is sitting in his wheelchair looking out the window, cussing everybody out. What's he going to say to Tony Khan when Tony Khan says, hey, we want you to come in and be reunited with Ric Flair, who we all know Ole Anderson loves so very much? I would love to be eavesdropping on that conversation. At least with Ole, the thing, he's consistent, right? He hates everybody and everything. So at least he's consistent in that. Quintus Brown, I see a 5-against-5 main event for Arthur Ashe. The Elite against Brian, Christian, Jurassic Express, and Kazarian. It would get everybody on the card. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Tamara Davis, Britt, has a lot of faces to feud with because they have so many over women. They need female heels besides her and Jade, though. Who would you turn heel? Who would I turn heel? Well, I mean, they have heels. They have Penelope Ford. They have the Bunny. But if I had to take a baby face right now, a female baby face, and turn them? I don't know. I'd have to take a look at the whole roster and see. Because there's Sheeta, there's Riho. Serena Deeb is still out with an injury. I don't know when she's expected back. I need to see the full roster. Michael Santanello, what would be your finisher if you wrestled the sharpshooter? Paul Heyman. I heard the real reason Adam Cole signed with AEW is because he didn't want to upset the Sala Monster and be the victim of a rant on Sunday's podcast. Well, nobody was more happy than I was to see Adam Cole make the right decision. He made the right move. And he left to go somewhere where I'm sure he will end up in a much better position than he would have otherwise been in. So, he made the right call. Smart man. Adam Cole is a smart man. And he's a lucky man. He gets to go home every night to Britt Baker. So what's not to like? He gets to go home to Britt Baker. He gets to go ahead and Twitch with all of his Twitch friends. Everything's coming up aces right now for Adam Cole. Dry chicken without flavor. If Private Party is not featured at the Arthur Ashe show, Tony Khan needs to get them out of this Hardy family office nonsense. Matt Hardy needs to be arrested. Arrested? Well, I've said Private Party is much less over now. I mean, I understand now they're heels, they're not baby faces. Being in the Hardy family office, at least on camera, I'm sure working with Matt Hardy has its benefits behind the scenes, and maybe they've learned stuff from him, but on camera has been death for Private Party. They're far less over now than they were 6 months ago. So, yes, the quicker they can get out of the HFO, the better off they will be. Powerful one. Maybe Wardlow will be the one who beats Miro for the TNT title after he breaks away from MJF and turns babyface. Possible. I like the idea of Jungle Boy and his kind of journey to the title, but yeah, if Wardlow breaks away from MJF soon and then, you know, slowly gets over on his own as a babyface, absolutely, I could see that. Jake Finn, how confident are you on the fact that they are breaking down the Dark Order only to reunite them under Bray Wyatt's leadership? In my opinion, AEW does not need Bray. I don't believe that Bray Wyatt is going to AEW. Kyle Mayer, I really, really, really don't want Bray Wyatt in AEW. It's not against him as a performer. He's great, but Bray doesn't fit. Certainly not anytime in the near future. I don't believe Bray Wyatt is going to AEW. I think there is a better chance of him and Braun Strowman both going to Impact. And maybe even being linked up again together in Impact. Let's turn that music off here. Bulu Fatulu. Better comedian in the 90s, Jim Carrey or Robin Williams? Oh, Robin Williams was the best. Come on. I can't vote against Robin Williams. And he also says, 16 candles. Boy, you coming with these pop culture questions here from the 90s and the 80s, aren't you? 16 candles or Pretty in Pink? Better Molly Ringwald movie. I can't say I'm a fan of either one of them. Yeah, I don't know. Neither. Dry chicken, it's time to introduce trios titles, women's tag titles, and a third title for the men. No. Absolutely not. How many titles do you want to introduce? Trios titles I'm okay with. And Tony Khan has talked about it. It's going to happen. They're going to get trios titles in AEW. That's all they need right now. They do not need women's tag team titles. They do not need women's tag team titles. Not yet. Trios I'm okay with. The other ones, no. Super Game and Chill Bros with the $5.99 Super Chat. Know who the hell ran long to cut Kazen Nanare, and with him getting cut like that, I really think it added to the match. We need more New Japan talent. And I think you will get more New Japan talent. It's just tough with all the pandemic stuff. But I do believe that this is just the beginning. We will get more. I'd love to see Ishii. How about Ishii doing some stuff in AEW, whether it's Moxley or, you know, against somebody else? You know, he may be one of the most underrated wrestlers that I've ever seen. Seriously. Tomohiro Ishii may be one of the most, not even maybe, he is one of the most. He may be the most underrated. I know people do speak highly of him, but again, when you think of these conversations about, like, the best, and you hear about Tanahashi, and you hear about Okada, and you hear about some of these really big names, I don't know that Ishii gets the respect that he deserves. And so I'd love to see him come over, too, and get some screen time and get some love the way that Suzuki got love tonight. I'd love to see Ishii come over and kick some ass, too. EJ Slemp. Are there any women, top women, in WWE that you think are unhappy and realistically might make the jump to AEW? I'm sure there are a lot of unhappy people in WWE. Do I think any of the women will make a jump to AEW at some point? Yes, I do. I do at some point. In fact, I could see Sasha Banks in AEW at some point. And boy, you talk about taking that women's division to the next level if that happens. You talk about a huge signing. All due respect to Ruby Soho, that ain't no Sasha Banks signing. If they can get Sasha Banks eventually to come over to AEW, that would be huge. But I'm sure there are quite a few unhappy people. I'm sure there are people who watched that show on Sunday who were DMing and texting and saying, oh, do you have room for me? I want to be part of that. How can you not watching a show like that? Uffman Entertainment, February 11th, 2020. I bought the tickets for the Newark show. Finally, a year and a half plus later, the show is happening. I cannot freaking wait. Well, Uffman, have fun and definitely chime in and let me know how it goes. And let me know what happens during the show. Let me know what your whole experience is. Super Game and Chill Bros. Also, Voodoo Ranger isn't all that bad. It's more of a mid-type beer, but it gets the job done with the taste. Okay, you said Voodoo. It's... I was like, what, Voodoo? What are you talking... What's Voodoo? He's talking about Voodoo. See? Voodoo. Not Voodoo. You sure you haven't been drinking to a couple of these? It's 7% alcohol by volume here. I think he's had a few. All that voodoo that you do. You gotta relax. I do. That's correct. You gotta relax, though, is the name of our next super chatter. He dropped $10. You may have addressed this already, but with all the new signings of former WWE guys and potential new signings, is there a fear that AEW could become WWE light? Not for me. When I hear WWE light, that's what TNA was trying to be for a while. That's one of the mistakes that Dixie Carter made back in the mid to late 2000s when TNA had a unique product. They had the X Division that was kind of all the rage at that time. And they really were doing certain things that did separate themselves from WWE, and then they just started trying to be WWE. And I don't just mean in terms of the names they were bringing in, but in terms of how they booked their television show, in terms of the storylines, in terms of just, you would watch the show and think you were watching WWE light. Problem is, you can't do that. You cannot outdo WWE at what they do. Now, what they do isn't always great, but they have a certain style and a certain way of producing television. They look at pro wrestling a certain way. If you're going to try to be WWE, you're going to fail because you're never going to be WWE. You will never have the money and the resources that WWE has. So don't try to be them. Try to be something different. And if you bring in people who used to be in WWE, that's fine. Use them wisely. Use them in a different way. Use them, you know, smartly. That doesn't make you WWE light just because you have people that came from there. I hear WWE light and it makes me think of TNA Impact back in the day in terms of how the product on TV is presented. There are certain things that you will see on Impact, or not Impact, on Dynamite and Rampage that do remind me of some stuff, especially some of the comedy stuff that you might see on WWE television. But there is enough about Dynamite that is different. I do not see it as WWE light. So when you use that word, you're using it in terms of talent. I don't see that being an issue. I just don't want them to start modeling their shows after the way that WWE does their shows. I get more than enough WWE during the week. What makes Dynamite fun on most weeks is the fact that it's different enough. And it's not WWE. It's completely something separate from WWE in terms of how they produce their television and some of the creative freedom that they give to people and some of the things they allow on their shows that WWE frankly just can't get away with because they're a PG product. And there are enough differences there that it makes the show stand out and it makes the show fun. I don't think they're in jeopardy of being WWE like. I don't quite look at it the same way that you do. Oh, look who it is. Tetsuya Ito, joining us again tonight, dropping $5. This is somewhat of a please acknowledge me donation. On Friday, me and my family have to put down one of our dogs who is more family than most humans. I'm very sorry to hear that. That's never an easy thing to do. I've not had any dogs, but I've had cats who have gotten older, who have gotten sick, and it's one of the worst experiences that you could go through. And frankly, it's the main reason I'll never have another pet. That and I'm allergic. I probably shouldn't have had one to begin with, but I mean, come on, right? It's fun to have a pet. But I can't go through that again. It's awful. So I know what that pain is, and it's horrible. And there's nothing I can say to make it any better other than I'm sorry. That's just a shitty thing to have to go through. And hopefully things go as smoothly as possible. But you know, again, it's never an easy thing. And I get what you, when you make that comment about, you know, the dog being more family than most humans, I think unless you've been a pet owner, you can't really fully understand that. Yeah, I mean, when I had my cats, there were people that I knew. I mean, I cared more about the cat than I did them. If it came down to a situation of rescuing one over the other, I'd rescue the cat first. EJ, are you a fan of Josiah Williams from Wrestle and Flow? I like his remixes and loved when he performed his remix to Adam Cole's theme at TakeOver 25. Yeah, Josiah is really talented, and they signed him to NXT, and then they fired him. He was part of the release. In fact, I think he got released twice. I think they released him. I think they brought him back, and then they released him again, unless I'm thinking of somebody else. But he's very talented. So what I've heard of him and his work, I've enjoyed. Yeah, who is it in the chat? I am allergic to cats. And I've had two cats going back to when I was a kid. Didn't realize until years into having the first cat that I was allergic. Was more than aware of it, though, when I got the second one. So why did I do that? I don't know. But she brought a lot of joy into our lives for almost 18 years. So do I regret it? Do I regret the fact that I've been taking Zyrtec every day of my life for 18 years? Not knowing what are the long-term effects of taking an antihistamine like Zyrtec for 18 years. Well, we're going to find out, I guess. Other than the fact that I'm dry, I have, you know, what's the word? Chronic dry mouth. Imagine having cotton mouth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's me. I'm almost positive it comes from taking the Zyrtec every day. Now, the cat passed away 2 years ago, but being in the same apartment and everything, I take half a pill. I have seasonal allergies as well. It's not just pet allergies, so. But yeah, 18 years I've been on that. I was on Zyrtec when it was still prescription. Now it's over the counter. But I don't regret it. I don't regret it. I love her. Jinx, you guys used to see. I would put pictures on social media sometimes. She was great. She was a little domestic, short-haired tabby. She was a great cat. Turtlehead, I'm too lazy to look it up, but did Punk and Miro ever have a WWE match or program? Also, shout out to the chat. No, I think they just missed each other, I think. I'm pretty sure they just missed each other, because Punk left in early 2014, and it was later, I want to say it was later that year that he got called up to the main roster. Right, and then WrestleMania the following year is when he had the big match with John Cena for the U.S. title. So I think like two ships passing in the night, they just missed each other. Tracking problem or problems says Mongo. That's his whole message. He says Mongo. I hope Mongo is doing okay. Yeah, he's got the issues with ALS, and that's never a good thing. I mean, that's terrible. You talk about a horrible blow to be dealt in terms of getting a horrible disease. It really doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, you think of stuff like ALS or multiple sclerosis. I mean, there are some horrible illnesses that just, you know, slowly kind of eat away at parts of you. And when he announced that he had that, it was shocking. And to see him have the kind of positive attitude that he has is inspiring. I don't know that I would necessarily be able to have that same kind of positive outlook if I were him, but, you know, more power to him. Tracking problems again. When we have the inevitable Punk and Cabana feud, we better get a heel Cabana singing Cult of Personality as his heel theme. That would be amusing. But we're not getting a Punk and Cabana feud. Bulu Fatulu. Vitamin Vision says, damn, Zyrtec should sponsor the podcast. You know what? Hey, yeah, let's do that. Let's get Zyrtec sponsoring this podcast. I'm sure one of these pharmaceutical companies, I'm sure they pay very well. And I could definitely endorse the product. I've been using it for so long. Let's get them on board. Let's get them on board. I got to tell you, I don't know how it is by you guys where you live. This whole summer, right up until even this week, it suddenly got really bad again this week. Pollen, like tree pollen and grass pollen and stuff, it's been horrible. So the Zyrtec definitely helps. But the dryness is just an absolute bitch. But anyway, tracking problems, again, I don't believe we're going to get Cabana and Punk. I think they're going to steer clear of each other. I don't think they have any interest in working with each other. Bulu, better video game, Mortal Kombat 2 or Super Street Fighter? Mortal Kombat 2. I have the arcade downstairs. It's a combo. It's got Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 2, and Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. I have it in the 1-Up arcade cabinet. I have it downstairs. Dry chicken without flavor. After All Out, Miro was getting jiggy with it in the hotel and CJ celebrating his win. Well, did you see Lana's tweets? I think, yeah, they were doing something all right. Turtlehead, overlooked was Sarah Logan being at All Out for Ruby. I saw the Road to All Out video. Sarah Logan made a surprise cameo backstage. She did not tell Ruby that she was coming. And she brought her new baby. So we had a little bit of a Riot Squad reunion backstage at All Out. The only thing missing was Liv Morgan. All right, final two messages here. Super Game and Chill Bros. I meant to say Voodoo, LOL, I figured. This autocorrect got me messed up. As for Ishii, he's that guy that people definitely appreciate as champion. An Ace of Masta with the $10 Super Chat drop. Justice for Suzuki. Again, I don't want to shit all over it because it was really cool to see him on the show tonight. We still got to see Suzuki wrestling in the main event on Dynamite, but man, for that match to get shortchanged the way that it was was very disappointing. And somebody pointed this out in the chat, and I wouldn't be surprised if this his reaction had something to do with that. Moxley looked kind of pissed when the match was over, and I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he was pissed because he knew that they got shortchanged. Maybe they had to cut out some stuff from the match. I'd be pissed too if I were him. But Ace of Master, thank you for the $10, my friend. So now we are all caught up on your super chats. Here is the Twitter poll. One last time here. 1,700 votes. Go ahead and vote at Solomonster. Right now, Dynamite is up 91-9 with 1,100 votes in the live chat poll. So you can vote in either place if that's your thing. If you'd like to go ahead and participate in that. And of course, we have to do the WrestleMania main event, or as I call it, what was the name I came up with? Oh, I already forgot the name I gave this segment. I forgot that I gave this segment a name. It was like booking the, what was it? Booking the territory or something like that. Be the Booker. That's what it is. I call this Be the Booker, where we randomly generate a match. That is our WrestleMania main event. I'm going to be the Booker this week. I think it's going to be very hard to beat out the match I booked 2 weeks ago. Randy Savage against Ric Flair. You think I could top that? Let's see. Let's see if I could top that. Be the Booker. Wrestler number one. Well, we've already lost. The Road Dogg. Jesse James. Road Dogg and WrestleMania are three words that should never, ever be associated with each other. Especially main event. Let's see. Who is the Road Dogg going to face in the WrestleMania main event? This should be good. The Road Dogg will be going one-on-one with Lance Storm. What do you think about that? How's that for a WrestleMania main event? The Road Dogg against Lance Storm. That probably is the worst WrestleMania main event that I have ever booked. And I love Lance Storm. Lance Storm's a great wrestler. But that has got to be the shittiest goddamn WrestleMania main event that I have ever booked. Be the Booker this week is a fail. I have failed you. I must apologize. Oh, we got one more super chat. Jackalope Music. With so much emphasis on feel-good content and the positive atmosphere in professional wrestling, would it be fair to call this the feel-good era? Well, you can call it whatever you want. We're still in the middle of the era. So until the era plays out, I don't know what you would call it. Feel-good era? See, when you say that, we're talking about AEW and some of the Forbidden Door stuff and a lot of the promotions working together. There's a lot to feel good about there. There isn't as much to feel good about when it comes to WWE. There's some stuff, but when you think of WWE, would you call this the feel-good era? Because I wouldn't. I don't really feel anything. Chris Manson. Thoughts on Shohei Ohtani. Not really as familiar with his work as I should be. So honestly, I don't really have a lot of thoughts on Ohtani. I don't want to sit here and pretend I know about his full body of work. So I can't really say one way or the other. Dr. NXT Scorpio. That has to be the most boring main event of all time. Good job, creative. No disrespect to both guys. And EJ Slemp. You once did Bully Ray against Baron Corbin. I'll take Lance Storm against anyone over those two. You mean you don't like Happy Corbin? You wouldn't want to see Happy Corbin in the WrestleMania main event? Yeah, me neither. All right, guys. That's all I got. I gave you everything I had. And I think it's about that time to wrap things up here. I want to thank everybody who hit that like button. If you haven't, please do. On your way out, we're right around 450. See if we can get that up a little bit more. We picked up some new channel members tonight and some new subs. I don't know if we're at 65 yet, but if not, we're getting pretty close. So hit that subscribe button. I'm going to be back here with you again live on Friday. There is a big SmackDown at MSG on Friday. We'll see. If I watch it live, I don't know if I'll turn it into a double review or not, but I might want to save that for the Sunday show. But we'll definitely be talking Rampage after the show goes off the air. And then this weekend is episode 721 of The Sound Off. No more This Week in History. That's over. I'm going to be taking more of your questions in the mailbag. And talking about, you know, the Kevin Owens news and any other news that comes up this week. So we got more super chats coming in. Trying to keep me around, huh? Dry chicken without flavor. Tony Schiavone against Adam Cole confirmed. And Zantara dropping $5. Thank you, Zantara. Tell us a nice story about your cat to end our day. A nice story about my cat. I mean, I could tell you the story about, I mean, I'll make it brief, but I mean, the story about how the cat came to be was really, it wasn't for me. It was as a birthday gift from my mother. When I was born, we already had a cat. She was a Siamese cat, Coco. And the cat died in 1996. And so my mother didn't want to get another cat because she knew that I was allergic. But I know she wanted one. So I said, you know, I'm going to get her a cat as a birthday gift. So I go into the... And at the time, you know, now, of course, I would go into like a shelter or something. But at the time I went to, there was a pet store near where we lived. So I went to the pet store and they took two cats. They put one on each shoulder. They were so tiny. One was a black cat. The other one was Jinx, the cat that I ultimately took home with me. And I said, this is the one that I want. They put a nice little bow around her neck, like a red bow. And they put her in a box and they poked holes in it. And I took her home. And I just sat it on the table and I waited. So my mother went out to go do something and I waited. And she came home and she saw the box and she probably knew. She saw the holes in the box. She said, what's this? She opened the box and we look in the box and this cat is terrified. First of all, this cat's like this, like a little tiny ball of fur. She is pressed up against the corner of this box, just absolutely like shaking, like terrified. And the problem is they put this bow, they tied it right around her neck. So we have to cut the bow, but she's fidgeting and she's not, you know, we don't want to fucking cut her throat. So that was a whole chore, but eventually we got the bow off. And as soon as we got the bow off, she bolted. And it was like a mad dash around the living room and we're like trying to chase her down and she's just trying to get away from us. Eventually we cornered her and we got her, we calmed her down. So you had to be there for it. But just to see how terrified she was. And then eventually she kind of warmed up to us and everything. She was cute. They're all cute. Kittens are cute. Who doesn't like kittens? If you know somebody who doesn't like kittens, you need to get them out of your life. Those people, they have no soul. I'm sorry. A kitten or a puppy, if you don't like them, then you have no fucking soul. So they're always cute when they're that tiny. But no, she was just, you know, cats are very independent. You don't have to coddle them the way that you do a dog. You don't have to go. The best part is you don't have to go walk them. So in the middle of the winter when it's freezing cold outside, you're like, fuck, I got to go walk the dog. Not me. Because the cat knows exactly where the litter box is. And she goes and she shits and she pees and she goes about her business. She wants to be fed. As long as you feed her, she doesn't give a shit. Cats are very independent in that way. I had a friend who had a calico. I don't know if all calicos are like this, but this cat was fucking insane. And it could be mean, too. But this cat was just wild. Nonstop energy. So I knew, don't ever get a calico. This cat was very calm. Very scared, though. If the doorbell rang, she'd be under the bed. I wouldn't see her for a day. That's all you had to do. If she suspected there was somebody else in the apartment, she was gone. She was gone. But anyway, after my, you know, after my mother passed away 3 years ago, you know, my brother and I, we had the cat, and she was getting older already by that point. But we were kind of hoping that, you know, everything would be okay because, you know, it's tough when you have an animal that has an owner and then the owner all of a sudden disappears. I just think of the story that Jim Ross told when his wife died in that accident. His wife had a cat. I mean, they had a cat, but it was really his wife's cat. And I think the cat died like 6 months later. And he said the cat died of a broken heart because his wife wasn't around anymore. So that was the biggest fear that went through my head, you know, when my mother was gone. And it was a year later, and she passed away, the cat. But she got sick. She had some kind of tumor, and you know, they leveled with me and said, look, at her age, You know, to even attempt to do something like this, it doesn't make sense. So let's try to get her as comfortable as possible. And boy, I got an education in giving. Have you ever had to give injections to your dog or cat? Because that's not fun. So they sent me home with syringes, and they sent me home with, it was a vitamin, was it a certain vitamin, like B12, I think it was a B12 shot. And they sent me home with the medication in this little vial and the syringes, and you had to get the needle into the fur, like in the neck and stuff. So we had the system where, you know, my brother would distract her with food, and then I would, you know, from behind, I, you know, you got to stick the syringe in at a certain angle and stuff. And I noticed a difference in her demeanor. All of a sudden, she had a lot of energy again, and there was about a week where I said, man, she's back to her normal self. This is great, right? But it was just that it was the effect of the medicine or the steroids or whatever that we were giving her. And after that, it just, you know, it was right back to the way things were. And, you know, it just gets to that point where you have to make a tough decision. And I really didn't want to make that decision, but I knew I was getting close. And then I didn't have to make that decision. So it just sort of happened, you know. I left the room, went to go do something. I came back into the room, and that was it. That was it. And so just that, just like that, right? Just that simple. But she was a great companion. What more can I say? You know, it's sad to think back on it, but I try to think of all the happy stuff. And anyway, that's the last pet that I'll ever own. So anyway, I don't know how we got on that. So I was telling a nice story, and then I ended up telling a sad story. But anyway, a lot of you I know remember all the photos of Jinx that I would share on social media. So yeah, having to deal with that a year after my mother passed away, like one right after the other, was not fun. That was not fun. But we're all here together, right? I got all of you guys to keep me company, so it's all good. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Food Hive, pour one out for all the great pets and the animals that we've lost. So I take a swig of my voodoo lager. Radical Velocity says, depressing end to the stream. Well, we should end in a nicer way. Rizzo just dropped 5. Brutal story. Unfortunately, I dealt with that last year with my cat. Cats are awesome, and I love dogs, too. Never had a dog. Too loud. I feel like I can't be streaming and hearing barking in the background. It's too loud. Cats aren't nearly as loud. They're not nearly as high maintenance as dogs are, but dogs are cool too. I have nothing against dogs. All right, guys, that's all I got. I'm going to head out. Tuxedo T Servo, yes, I will see you on Friday night. Hopefully, I will see all of you on Friday night as well. Right back here. I promise no depressing cat stories. We'll keep it happy. Food Hive says, I skipped the super chat. Uh-oh, we better make sure I didn't miss anybody here. Who'd I miss? Ah, thank you. Dr. NXT Scorpio, I almost missed it. Thank you. You better thank Food Hive here for reminding me. Dr. NXT Scorpio says, buy or sell Godzilla or Kong, as in King Kong. You know, I go Cloverfield Monster. I don't really give a shit about either one of them, to be honest with you. But if I had to choose, I got to go with Godzilla. There's something about sea monsters. I got to go with Godzilla. But I was never really a huge fan of either one. Give me the Cloverfield Monster. I want that sequel. Supposedly, it's being written as we speak. I want that direct sequel to the original. That's why you see that poster over my shoulder. One of my favorite movies. I'm still waiting on the sequel to that. You give me that, and I'll be happy. You give me that, I'll do a review here on the channel. I might even do a review dressed up as the Cloverfield Monster if I could find a costume for it. All right, be well, stay safe. Thank you for all of our new channel members. Again, hit that join button if you're interested down below. It'll give you all the information. And let's get to 65,000 as soon as possible. here on the channel. The quicker we get to 65, we can get to 66. It's all because of your support. So I thank you. All right, guys. Peace out. I'll see you Friday night.